Morning, I call this meeting in North Dakota Public Service Commission to order. It is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024 at 10 o'clock. And before we start, would you join me in pledging our allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So I'm Randy Christman, Chair of the Public Service Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugenhoffert and Julie Fedorchak. So we have a quorum. The only opening thing I would say, because over the years, a few times I've grumbled about it when we add things last minute to the agenda sometimes, and this time it was me doing it, and so we added the Westmoreland violation case. But I do want to point out these mine NOVs, our law follows the requirements of SMACRA, which means this very quick turnaround time that is impossible legally. And so based on when everything was filed, we really had to finalize this, I can't remember, either Friday or Monday or something like that. So actually this was originally on for scheduling something probably either tomorrow or Friday, but staff was very prompt and got things done earlier than expected, but it was still yesterday afternoon. And so that's why that's on there late, and that's the only opening comment. And but if someone is unready for it, if you didn't have time to review it, we can, we'll pull that off the calendar, but then we have to schedule a special meeting. So with that, Commissioner Haugenhoffert.
Thank you, Commissioner Christman. I won't grumble that you added that late. Okay. That's fine. last week, I had the privilege of being at NARUC. I'm not going to take Commissioner Fedorchak's thunder because she's the president of NARUC and did an amazing job on the agenda, so I'll let her go through that. So great job, Julie. But I do want to say I had the privilege of interviewing or being on a discussion with Poosh Kumar, who is the director within the Department of DOE, in which NARUC worked in partnership with the DOE to have a stakeholder committee, in which I'm a part of, to develop baselines for cybersecurity. We have released those initial baselines. He was asked directly if he's looking at making these a requirement, and the answer is no, but these are baselines for commissions to use working with industry on cybersecurity. I would have to say if there was two buzzwords at NARUC, it was cybersecurity and wildfires on that. And so protecting our infrastructure. So it was a good conversation. We had people coming up to us afterwards and talking about that. This is something that's very important because we hear about it every day in the national headlines. So with all that, I have to say again, good job, Julie, on the agenda and all that. And I'll pass it over to you.
Awesome. Thank you. It was a great meeting. There was record attendance. 1,900 folks attended the meeting, the highest participation that NARUC has ever seen. So that's exciting. I think it speaks to the importance of the work that's occurring on state regulatory commissions throughout the country and the important role that state regulators have in the energy mix and the energy systems in our country. So we did have a very a provocative and interesting agenda. Senator Manchin was there and spoke to us, and I thought his comments were a tonic for all that ails our nation right now. He's just like was so visionary in his views on the energy policy that we need, which I think is central to maintaining the country's strength and stability and being a leader both here and throughout the world. But beyond the agenda, NARUC had two things that I thought were really important and noteworthy. First of all, one of the sessions we interviewed had on stage Joe Goffman, who is the lead person for EPA that is finalizing the greenhouse gas rules that will impact coal and gas-fired power plants. And they're in the final stages of developing those rules. And he was questioned by myself and three other commissioners from across the country, one from West Virginia, one from Colorado, and one from Indiana, and myself, on the development of those rules. And he got pushed pretty hard in terms of the technologies that they're proposing to be required to be used by 2030 and all these sorts of things. And overall, his takeaway was he committed to providing maximum flexibility to states for compliance with these rules and for taking into consideration reliability and affordability. And he stated it, you know, pretty directly. Of course, we want to maintain reliability. Of course, we're not going to do anything to jeopardize reliability. And he said it pretty emphatically, as if that would be the very basic premise on which these rules are built. I hope that he means what he says or said, and that that's truly what comes out of those rules. We will see, because I expect those rules to be finalized and come forward in the next month or two. I forget what month. Yeah, certainly by May, I believe. Additionally, so that was a worthwhile conversation, and I was cautious. I'm cautiously optimistic that he's going to be able to rein in the others in his agency who see things pretty differently. The other thing that NARUC did that is pretty significant is we passed a resolution on EPA's regulation of greenhouse gas emissions from new and existing power plants. Keep in mind, NARUC is a national organization representing every state, some territories as well, with very, very diverse energy policies. And we passed a resolution. The board passed a resolution. The board speaks for the organization that tells the EPA to recognize the primacy of states, to rely on utility regulators to lead the creation of the emission performance systems that reflect the policies, the resource mixes, and the economic conditions of each state. You have a copy of this. The last page is the most important. It resolves that the EPA should ensure that the rules for the standards of performance for new and existing sources are achievable, demonstrated, and cost-effective. It states that the EPA should issue rules in their issuing of the rules that adequately consider the impact of those rules on reliability and affordability. It states that EPA should permit states maximum flexibility in meeting the rules requirements. It states that the guidelines should be flexible enough to allow states individually or regionally to take into account when establishing the standards of performance, the different makeup of existing and planned power generation in each state and region. And it says that EPA needs to recognize state and regional variations to achieve the most cost-effective emission reductions in each state, and also emphasizes that the EPA shall not intrude on states' jurisdiction over decisions regarding integrated resource planning and or resource adequacy or otherwise mandate specific modification to the mix of fuels and resources in existing and future state generation portfolios. So this is a very, very strong statement from state utility regulators nationwide to the EPA, reminding them that states are in control. We have the responsibility for both the reliability and affordability of the systems, and we need to have flexibility in these rules to ensure that they do not jeopardize reliability and affordability. And this was supported by states from California to New York and everyone in between. So it's a really, really strong statement. And again, we have to hope that the EPA is listening as they work on the final development of those rules. But again, I think it's just an example of getting people from diverse opinions to come together on issues of common importance and finding a way forward together in a, really, this is a very bipartisan resolution. So I think it's, I'm really pleased that we were able to get it done. A lot of the credit goes to Kent Chandler, who's a commissioner from Kentucky, who took the lead on looking at what we did last time and developed a resolution and helped get it through the various committees that it needed to pass through to get it to the board and ultimately to the approval. So very excited about that. That's okay. It for me.
Thank you. Moving into our agenda then, I move the commission conditionally approve revision 8 to surface coal mining permit BNCR-110.
You forgot consent.
Oh, consent. Very good point. We have four items on our consent calendar. I move approval of those four items plus the minutes of the previous meeting.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Now, as I was about to start saying, I move the commission conditionally approve revision 8 to surface coal mining permit BNCR-1101 held by BNI Coal Limited for the Center Mine to add 2,661.04 acres of land located in sections 11, 14, 15, 16, 22, and 23, all in Township 141 North, Range 84 West, modify the post-mining topography for 1,211 acres in the existing permit area, add federal coal lease NDM 1055.13 to the permit, and to update the appropriate sections of the permit for mining in the added area in BNI Coal Limited, Revision 8, Permit BNCR-1101, Application Case Number RC-20-438.
Second.
So, if that was a long motion, it's been a long process. On October 28th of 2020, so 3.5 years ago, BNI filed the application for Revision 8, which adds 2,661 acres and includes plans to mine federal coal tracts. The addition increases the total acreage in the permit to over 11,000 acres. Revision 8 adds 320 acres of federal coal. The surface over the federal coal, I want to emphasize, is privately owned, not owned by the federal government. However, prior to overburden and coal removal on the federal coal tracts, the Federal Department of Interior must approve the mine plan. So special condition number one attached to the initial permit issuance remains in full force here. It prohibits any overburden or coal removal from the federal coal tracts until BNI receives the coal lease and the Secretary of Interior approves the federal mine plan. BNI has obtained the federal coal lease, but until federal mine plan is approved by the Department of Interior, surface disturbances on the federal coal tracts are limited to those activities that the commission determines are necessary for carrying out mining on the adjoining tracts. And I want to highlight this because I've heard many federal politicians that are day after day, year after year, standing in the way of coal development. And then when they're called out on it because there's a reliability issue somewhere, they run out and point out all the leases they've approved. However, approving the lease is only half of what's needed from them. The mine plan approval is also needed for the lease to do any good. And that has been an ongoing issue in this case. So revision number 8 was deemed a so when you hear people at the federal level say like, oh, well, we're approving all these leases, that's the hook that they have to get in the way of mining. Revision number 8 was deemed a significant revision and was subject to the public notice requirements, BNI submitted affidavits of publication of the required newspaper notices. We notified the appropriate agencies, the permit area landowners, and advisory committee members of the revision application. We had requests for informal conferences. Those were received in July last summer, and an informal conference was held then on August 17th. The hearing officer issued the findings, ruling, and recommended order on September 12th, recommending really three things. He said that BNI must provide haul road design plans to access the additional area and plans for any other roads that may be necessary. Number two, that they must conduct seismic and air blast monitoring at or near all occupied dwellings within 1 mile from the nearest charged drill hole. And advance notice must be given to landowners so they can be present when that happens. And number three, to revise revision number 8 to remove all mining disturbances within 500-foot setback from occupied structures unless it's approved by the owners in writing. And this commission approved the hearing officer's recommended order on September 14th. So BNI revised the revision to remove the disturbances within 500-foot setback from occupied dwellings unless approved by the owners, and to conduct the seismic and air blast monitoring at or near all occupied dwellings within a mile with the advance notice given to the landowners. Special condition 5 here, though, is being added to require BNI to provide that haul road design plans and plans for any additional roads that may be necessary. Special condition number 5 also requires BNI to document the condition of the existing county road infrastructure. Special condition 6 is being added, which states that no disturbance shall occur within a 100-foot stream buffer zone in the northwest quarter of section 13 and township 141 north, range 84 west, until BNI receives the appropriate approvals to work within the stream buffer zone. Those would come from DEQ and the Water Commission and then be reviewed by us. And the commission approves the design plan, and also that the commission approves the design plan for the haul road crossing that intermittent stream. The existing surety bond for this permit totals about just short of $42.5 million, and that's been deemed to be sufficient to cover the permit at this time. BNI submitted, and we accepted a rider that added Revision 8 acreage to the surety bond last August. So the Reclamation Division has completed its revision review and recommends that it be conditionally approved, and I agree with that recommendation.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Randy, how long did it take to get the leases approved? Do you recall?
I would have to look to staff for that, but I think it was probably a decade.
Jonathan, do you? Okay. Yeah. I was wondering if this was the one where they talked about it being that long.
I know they have had one. I believe this is it.
And then we're still not, do we have any idea how long the mine plan review and approval will take?
Have they given any indication? I don't know if Jonathan.
It used to take a few months, but it's probably at least 1 or 2 years.
Okay. And so we're looking at...
For the recording, staff said that these mine plan approvals used to take a few months, but probably more like 1 to 2 years now.
So when you hear about federal agencies dragging their feet, we're not talking about a year or 6 months. We're talking about decades. This is the situation we're in, and this is what the coal mines are facing when it comes to federal... coal mining.
And
it's almost impossible.
Yeah. And this could potentially be on the verge if they don't get that approved. At some point, a mine has to move around these things. Mm-hmm. And there have been cases where mines just work around the federal coal, at which point a fair amount of the land gets disturbed anyways because they're allowed to remove what to move the ground that is necessary to mine the adjacent coal. They mine around it. So essentially the disturbance is there, just that coal gets left in the ground and the federal taxpayers don't recover anything from it, and no one will ever come back to mine a little tract like that again once and it's reclaimed. And so it's just an absolute waste of money from the federal government. And it drives up the cost because it's more expensive for the mine to go around it. And so it drives up our electric costs.
And how did the federal government come to own the leases or the mineral leases under private land like this? Any idea?
I think in a variety of ways. I think through some bankruptcies back in Depression years, there were times when that reverted to the federal government.
Yeah.
And then when they later sold the land, they held the
minerals.
Also, I think they, at homesteading time, I think there were some instances where they held minerals back then too, but I don't know how it was determined which ones.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, and I haven't heard any requests to hold this yet, so this is the late edition. I move the commission adopt the order and notice of violation 2301 issued to Westmoreland Beulah Mining LLC at the Beulah Mine to affirm the violation, assess a civil penalty, and close the case upon payment of the penalty. In Westmoreland Beulah Mining LLC, notice of violation 2301, violation case number RC-23-355.
Second.
So this NOV was issued on December 11th. So quite a change around. Last time we were talking about the federal government and a decade or more. And here we're talking about North Dakota Public Service Commission, and we're talking about a few months. So this was issued on December 11th following inspections that were conducted by our reclamation staff on November 9th and 15th. The NOV was issued for failure to install appropriate measures to prevent and control water erosion in a portion of a reclaimed drainage, which resulted in a loss of topsoil. On January 9th, Westmoreland submitted a request for an informal conference regarding this NOV. this was that action required the commission to assess a proposed penalty and then schedule the conference. And the commission proposed a civil penalty of $3,000, and that was based on $1,000 for their history of violations, $500 for the seriousness of the case, and $1,500 for negligence. The fourth category that we work with is a potential deduction of the penalty for good faith, and we did not grant anything there in our recommendation. That was January 24th. So the informal conference was held on February 8th. The hearing officer issued the informal conference findings, ruling, and recommended order then on March 1st. And that recommended order affirms the NOV and assesses the $3,000 penalty that we had recommended. And so Reclamation Division staff recommends that the PSC adopt the hearing officer's order. And I again agree with that recommendation.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, so I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Haugenhofer.
Thank you. I move the commission suspend the tariff and rates, reduce the application fee to $10,000, and issue a notice of opportunity of hearing in Otter Tail Power Company, My Renewable Energy Credits, Rider, Tariffs and Rates, case number PU-24-76.
Second.
Thank you. On February 14th, Otter Tail did file an application for approval to implement a new My Renewable Energy Credit Rider. The new service offering will be a voluntary rider that will allow non-residential customers with a demand over 20 KW an opportunity to offset carbon associated with their energy use by utilizing Otter Tail Power's excessive generation renewable energy credits. Customers will have the opportunity to participate at 50%, 75%, or 100% of their usage at a per kilowatt charge based on the currently approved small power producer rate and administrative charge for processing and retiring OT Otter Tail Power Company's excessive RECs. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are the proposed tariff rates just and reasonable? Do the proposed rates comply with the tariff? And are the proposed rates just and reasonable? Persons desiring a hearing must file a written application, must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for the hearing must be received by April 19th, 2024, and if deemed appropriate, the Commission can determine the matter without a formal hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That ends my portfolio.
Okay. Two out of three portfolios done. Would anyone like a recess before we move on?
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think we have a fix to the issue, so I don't need to recess.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchak.
All right. Victor's handing out a substitute page on the order, and I'll go through what's changed, but first of all, I'll do the motion. I move the Commission accept the order adopting ALJ recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Basin Electric Power Cooperative 345 KV transmission line, citing application case number PU-23-338.
Second.
Okay, so this case was, we have a recommended order from a hearing officer, a substantive ALJ who went out to the hearing and conducted it on our behalf and then provided a recommended order. The order basically that we have before us today orders that the hearing officer's recommended findings of facts, conclusion of law and order is adopted, and that is for this 14.6 mile 345 kV transmission line. It has a 150 foot corridor. And it's for the construction, operation, and maintenance of a 345 kV transmission line and substation in Williams County. This connects the new Pioneer Generating Facility, the 500 megawatt gas facility that Basin is constructing up there to their broader transmission system. There's a 14.6 mile gap from that facility to the transmission system. They needed this 345 kV line to connect it. So that's the project. The second piece of the order, and this is where there's a little bit of a discrepancy, in the ALJ's order, there was a statement that wasn't entirely accurate. So our order number two had to be changed to sort of reflect that. And so we're saying in order number two that the ALJ recommended findings of facts, conclusions of law and order, paragraph 10, notes that the State Historical Society of North Dakota concurrence that no significant sites are impacted by the project has been received. However, additional acreage was added to the project area subsequent to the original State SHPO concurrence. And so while that is accurate and we did receive that concurrence, they haven't received the second concurrence for the additional acreage yet. And so we had to add in our second ordering provision that Basin Electric Power Cooperative may not begin construction until it obtains and files with the commission the concurrence that there are no significant sites affected within the additional acreage or that any impacts have been or will be properly mitigated in consultation with SHPO. So that's the piece that we added to what you had before. And it just clarifies, because if you look at order number 10 from the ALJ's order, which is on page 3 of that order, it basically says that we have received all the SHPO concurrence when indeed we have still not received it for the additional acreage. So that's the only clarification on that. Thank you to staff for getting that taken care of. So basically, to go through this a bit, the hearing was held on February 1st. The total cost of this project is $31 million. Basin Electric consulted with all of the various agencies necessary. They conducted the wildlife, threatened endangered species, critical habits, wetlands, water bodies, all of those overviews. They did the SHPO studies. There's no exclusion areas within the this area of construction. There's no avoidance areas. And so it's a pretty straightforward project and necessary for Basin to get that power plant's output to the customers that need it. And so I think with all those things covered, I think this is ready to go, and I'm ready to support it.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just wanted to know for sure, does this mean they can't start any of the, how long, what, four of the 14 miles of construction until SHPO provides this information, or they can't impact that acreage that was added?
They can't begin construction until they file.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. The second one is another transmission line with Basin Electric. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Basin Electric Power Cooperative, Roundup to Coomer Ridge 345 kV Trans Dunn and McKenzie, citing application case number PU-23-361.
Second.
Okay, so this is another transmission line. This one is longer and really vital to the power needs of Western North Dakota and the Bakken. So on December 15th, Basin Electric filed their consolidated application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for this 32.5-mile, 345 kV electric transmission line in Dunn and McKenzie counties in North Dakota. We had a hearing on February 16th in Kildare about 3 weeks ago. And it was a great hearing in Kildare. We had really good participation from the public, from the company. The company went through everything. There was nobody that was spoke up against it that I recall.
Correct.
And so it was a really productive day. I think a lot of people appreciated hearing our process and going through and hearing the company's plans for it. The total cost of this project is $74 million, and they consulted 40 different local, state, and federal agencies in developing these plans, conducted all the wildlife, threatened endangered species, habitat studies, did all the SHPO studies. There were not any exclusion areas within the survey area. There were a couple different avoidance areas. Some of them were archaeological sites. Basin has designed the project to avoid all of those and provide a reasonable buffer to protect the integrity of those sites. They have identified a few geologically unstable areas within the area and are avoiding those to the extent practical. But some of them need to be, it was unavoidable, so they have specific construction methodologies they'll be using in those areas. And there was really no other avoidance areas. Well, there was habitat for the Dakota skipper and northern long-eared bat within the service areas, but that they are avoiding, and the wildlife agencies were good with their plans for that. So having gone through all that, this is a piece of transmission line that's really important to help mitigate some of the congestion that is occurring in the Bakken area. The company has put together a good plan for it. We worked through it in a thorough manner, but in a very efficient time frame, less than 3 months from when we received the application to approval. I think that's also further indication of the importance of this infrastructure and our support of the project getting underway as soon as possible so we can start eliminating that congestion and shoring up the reliability of the power to this really important part of our state. So with that, I'm happy to support this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I guess I would just like to add that the timeliness of this, I mean, how quickly we can move a project along, getting the application in December, having a hearing in February, and now we're here approving it. So, Julie, you mentioned that the application was well-prepared, and I want to echo that. But this is our second transmission project that we're approving today. That's, with the previous one and now with this one, that's over $105 million in costs to improve the transmission up there to alleviate, hopefully, that congestion up there. So it's costly. Yeah. It's costly for two projects. So I'm in support of this, but it's a lot of money going in energy development.
I would also like to just point out to the timeliness, the great work of our staff. We've got a very small staff for our public utilities division, considering the amount of work we have going on and the amount of investments that folks are making in North Dakota and the importance of the work that we're doing to ensure that these projects are being done correctly, safely, quickly, all of the above. And we can't do that without good staff. So appreciate our leadership and Victor, the whole staff team, and the amazing work they're doing, and also the legislature's support of us getting. I think we got one additional PUD employee last year, and the PUD team is working, full steam on so many fronts. FERC issues, several cases in front of FERC. We've got lots of siting cases and a record number of rate case increases, plus two RTOs to cover. So it is a massive amount of really important, highly technical work that our staff is doing, and we couldn't do it without a good staff and the legislative support behind that. So everybody, team effort.
Ditto. Okay. Well said.
And I want to add something, because you made such an important point that I was going to say. Here is where the legislature's support of the agency really pays off, because the congestion is costing MDU customers big time up there. This potentially helps that. I think more importantly, it does help the reliability of that oil patch because you were both so right on the timeliness of how quickly we process this, but back when we did a different 345 line from Beulah to Williston and then ultimately to Tioga, about a decade ago already, Basin already was working on this application. They knew then that this was necessary because where this goes from Kildare, it's up in that Johnson Corner area where so much activity occurs. Last thing I want to say, hope I don't get in trouble for ex parte, but at the hearing in Kildare, it was pointed out to me by a Watford City gentleman that it's not Coomer Ridge, as we keep saying. It's Cummer Ridge. And he said, pronounce it right. So I'm getting it on the record. Cummer Ridge.
I suppose,
Ridge.
Yeah. It's got two M's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I should know this. Being a journalism and English major.
So if my friend from Watford City is listening,
sorry,
it's
Cummer
on the
Ridge.
Record now.
Cummer Ridge. It would be hard to break that habit.
I'll just ask for forgiveness.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, finally, I move the commission assess an application fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Caliber North Dakota LLC transfer certificates number 164 and number 229 permits number 176 and number 239 citing application case number PU-24-79.
Second.
So this is a simple transfer request. We approved the permits for two pipelines, one in 2015 for a 4+ mile, 6-inch natural gas pipeline and facilities in McKenzie County to, Caliber. And then in 2023, January 2023, a 2.62 mile, 8-inch natural gas pipeline and facilities in McKenzie County. And the Caliber is now requesting to transfer these certificates to Valence Natural Gas Solutions, LLC. Anybody who has comments or wants to request a hearing on this transfer of certificates must let us know by April 19th of this year. And if we think it's appropriate, we can make a decision on this without a hearing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. Since we took care of that second motion of mine, right now I'm showing nothing for the admin meeting. Does anyone have anything to add? Because if not, we won't have to reconvene for that. Meeting.
Do we have scheduling?
No, it's a special meeting. I don't think you can add.
Oh, yeah, I suppose we yep. can.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so we won't be reconvening for that. So the, we could add scheduling.
You could yep. add scheduling, correct.
Does anyone have any scheduling things to bring
I
up?
I don't.
So we won't be reconvening for an administrative.
That's the first ever, I think.
So. I believe so. The only announcements I would have is, just to be clear, because of the schedule that we have to send out a whole year ahead of time, the regular commission meeting for tomorrow is canceled. That's why we're meeting today. Today replaces that one. And our next meeting is not in 2 weeks from today. It's not in 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's a three-week gap. Now it's a three-week and a day gap. Next meeting, regular meeting, Wednesday, March 27th, 10 o'clock right here. With that, we are adjourned, and after adjournment, we will take questions from the press.